Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Conservative Voice. I am Joanne Suppressi. I'm filling in for Don Beischel today as he is enjoying the holidays with his family. So we are live in the WWDB studios on 860 AM. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. So in studio with me today, I have Larry Steinhaus and...
Oh, my.
And
you must have been desperate for a guest if you asked me to come along.
It was spur of a moment. We were at your networking meeting.
And you opened your mouth and you regretted it ever since.
I did. I'm a little nervous today, actually, yes.
And for those of you who don't know who I am, she's not nervous because of my presence. She's nervous because she's afraid of what I'm going to say.
Yeah, yeah. You never know. You never know what Larry Steinhaus will say when he's live on the air. But we also have Senator Doug Mastriano on with us today. Are you here, Doug?
Hello, hello, hello.
Awesome. Good. How are you?
Great. Thank you. Larry, what's up, brother?
Doug, I am so excited. I'm still crying, by the way. I mean, seriously, it's bad that you're not the governor, but it's horrible that Shapiro's the governor. How did we do this? Oh, my goodness.
I know. Oh, my goodness. You know, I don't know what to say. We worked our butts off, that's for sure.
I know.
Oh,
my goodness.
Yeah, you were all over.
I'm still in tears.
Yeah, you were in all 67 counties more than twice, right? You were,
yep.
I mean,
yep.
you traveled all over. I mean, you every day, I saw you in a new place. And your lovely wife joined you all the way. And that's the one thing that really impresses me, too, is having, when I see a candidate running for office and their wife joins them, even if they join them like half the time, I'm like, look at her. She's great. Or if a woman's running and the husband's, joining them, whatever the case is, like when your partner's joining them. But she was there with you every day.
Yeah. And she made our ticket stronger by doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing that she did, which I loved, was the woman's rights. I don't know. What do I call it? The woman's rights statement that she
did. That was beautiful.
Did
it was
all
brilliant.
The time.
It was absolutely brilliant.
The woman's right to be born.
I wish I could remember. Yeah. The last sentence was the woman's right to be born, which I thought was great. But everything else about it was fantastic.
Yeah. Because the crazy far left is like, oh, we don't believe in women's rights. Yes, we do. And your wife brought it out so well, women's right to be born, women's right to, play in sports not dominated by men, women's rights for just a long list of things. And that was brilliant.
Yeah, it was so strong coming from Rebbe, and it dispelled all the propaganda. Obviously, we're up against some of the establishment. We're up against a very, very, very radical anti-Doug media as well. And, I think Shapiro, in the end, in his last report, $68 million. I mean, that's more than double what Wolf had, and then Wolf had a spending. I mean, it's incredible.
Wow. Yeah, it was amazing. I don't watch TV too much. It's very rare that I do. Actually, I don't watch any TV, so I may have on like Amazon Prime or YouTube videos on my big Roku TV. I listen to stuff like that, and especially I do a lot of research for my own business, and on YouTube, it was like almost every commercial or every time there was a break, it was like a Shapiro ad attacking you, and it was the same three messages the whole time. It's like his whole campaign was just attack, attack, attack. It works. And it works.
It obviously works. But plus, on top of that, you had, even Oz spent, out of his own money, he spent $25 million of his own money, and that was half of what Fetterman spent, and Fetterman spent zero of his own money.
Wow.
So all Fetterman's money came from other places. I was actually trying to figure out what company, because there was a breakdown somewhere in the Wall Street Journal about how much money was each candidate spent and where the money came from. I'm trying to figure out what corporations would donate $35 million to Fetterman. I mean, what are they looking for?
Go ahead, Doug.
So I looked at one thing, and I don't know how accurate it was, but they said for the Senate race between Fetterman and Oz, it was about $250 million all said and told. The Senate under Mitch McConnell spent about $60 million boosting Oz. I mean, you know, and I wish I was running against somebody like Fetterman, who basically, you know, I don't want to be too crude here. I'm not going to say what I'm going to say. But somebody with severe cognitive disabilities, yeah, like our president.
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, and the other thing, and you know, Doug, I reached out to you during the primary, and I sent you a text message saying that almost all of Fetterman's votes came by mail in the primary. Now he ran on I'm sounding like Biden. I can't remember a word.
You have a Biden moment.
The thing.
You Bidened.
No one ran against him is the word I'm looking for. Whatever it was. But all his votes came. I think it was 70% of his votes came in by mail, and I was shocked to see that. I'm like, whoa, there's a problem here. And yeah, I kept looking at that. I actually did a report on my show about that, about the fact that almost most of the votes in the primary for Democrats, 68% of the votes in the Democrats, I believe it was 68% when I reported it, where the Democrat votes came in through the mail, and only 17% of the votes for the primary came in for Republicans.
Yeah,
and so there's something wrong.
Yeah, and your senator, I saw that you won in person, during in person elections, you won by 70,000 votes.
Yeah, in person election day, if there was no mail-in voting, we would have won it. But you know, in Shapiro, when he did the initial dump. And by the way, I maybe you guys can explain it to me. You know, I don't understand how I see ballots being subtracted from my count. It should always be going up, you know, for me and Shapiro. And I saw a couple places where they took ballots.
I saw that too.
And
it was a huge number, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was significant. But when they did that initial drop of mail-in ballots out of Pittsburgh and Philly, I mean, that created a 400,000 voter deficit. That I was waiting for the spike to come from red counties, and we were getting reports from all the polling stations across the state and in the Republican areas, record turnout for, you know, a midterm, and we saw no benefit from that. And I just kind of shake my head and like, you know, what the heck's going on here?
Yeah, because Shapiro won, the amount that he won by was the basically the amount of mail-in ballots, right?
Yeah.
So I saw
about 800,000 votes in mail-in. And so, yeah, that was his victory there. You know, on our side here, we need to figure out what the Democrats are doing with that. We're going to have to probably, you know, embrace whatever they're doing. And just when we're door knocking, it's not, I don't think it's enough anymore saying, hey, will you vote for Doug? I think now it has to be like, are you going to vote? And if not, you know, here's how you get your mail-in vote, because we
right,
we cannot keep losing like this.
Yeah. I know toward like the last few days, I actually, not the last few days, it was like the last few days, I think like I started like 10 to 7 days out, I would actually bring the mail-in, like a mail-in ballot application with me when I knock at the door, because, right, you know, people need to, like, and I think that's something we could implement in future elections, is actually bring the application out, you know, to the door, and because people need to have it right in their hands, because a lot of people don't take the initiative to go online. For example, there's this guy I work out, well, I don't work out with him, but he works out at the gym with me, and he never voted for anybody in his whole life except for Trump, and he said he liked you and he wanted to vote for you, but he said he wasn't going to vote, and I'm like, well, do a mail-in ballot then if you don't want to go out on election day. And it was like so much work for him just to go online to do the application. So sometimes we have to actually physically hand them it.
Yeah,
you know?
Maybe. I just don't see. I don't see Pennsylvania ever having a Republican anything ever again if we continue with these mail-in votes.
Well, there's a state. I forget the state, but it's out west. They haven't. You might know, Doug. They haven't had a Republican winner since they started mail-in votes, like many wow, years ago. I'll get the state and send information to you later. But yeah, so it's interesting how that happens. You know. But
the only way they can fight is a victory in a court, you know, and I know there has been lawsuits challenging the constitutionality of the no excuse mail-ins, but we have to have a victory in court, I think, for that to end.
Well, do you know a senator who might be able to help that with that?
Oh, yeah. I'm actually looking at you like, who? And I'm like, wait, we have one on the phone with us right now.
So I actually have a question for you, Doug, because this was interesting. I had assumed that you had to resign as senator to run for governor. And I noticed you didn't. And I know that in Florida, DeSantis is trying to change that bill now, or trying to change that law now. What do you think the odds are that he'll be able to do that?
Well, you know, I'm not going to dodge it. I'm going to answer that indirectly. You know, it's kind of funny because when just Republicans, you know, have a seat and are running for a higher office, the media screams and hollers they must resign. But you'll notice this year that there was not a peep about that because John Fetterman was also our lieutenant governor.
Right.
And by the way, he has not shown up to he has one job, is to preside over the Senate as the president of the Senate. He has not showed up once since May. Wow. Could you imagine if I skipped any session days, you know, this past year to campaign, and instead of doing his job, he was campaigning across the state. And then, of course, you have Shapiro simultaneously as the AG and running for his seat. But the beautiful thing is this strategy of a free pass by the media on the Democrats, you know, with double standards, it's biting him in the butt because there's three House seats in the state Senate in Harrisburg that Democrats ran for the seat while simultaneously, you know, I wasn't running for re-election, so this was pretty easy actually for me. But three state House members running for the seat while simultaneously running for another seat, and that's Austin Davis. He ran for his state seat and won it, of course. It's a Democrat area in Pittsburgh, and he's going to be the lieutenant governor. And so that's one less seat they're going to have. And there's two other seats. One, Summer Lee in Pittsburgh, she ran for Congress while also running for her state seat, and she won Congress and re-election in that state house. And then I guess there's I mentioned Fetterman. But the state house, it's up to one or two seats now who's going to ever be in the majority. And because of this double standard and free pass by the media, Democrats are going to lose a majority in the House here for at least 6 months, which is going to be fantastic. And so that's a great blessing.
All right.
Yeah, I like how that sounds.
Now, I know, you know, so Trump, you know, Trump obviously endorsed you and endorsed a bunch of other people as well. And then there's the rumor that, oh, everybody that Trump endorsed lost. And we all know that that's not even close to true.
I love that. Yeah, it's all because what the media is projecting.
Exactly.
The media is only focusing on the few that lost instead of the majority that won, because there were more won than lost.
So, hey, do we get Collins to the show?
Yeah, we could get Collins. Oh, I didn't get
the phone number.
Why don't
you
get the
phone number?
See, you know why?
I'm actually curious because I actually would love to hear a poll on who would vote for DeSantis over Trump or Trump over DeSantis.
That's a really good one.
I'm going to tell you what I want, just so you know.
All right, well, let me share the number first.
All right, you do that, guys.
All right, so if you'd like to call in and talk with Larry, Doug, or I, 888-329-3306. And yeah, that's a great question. So would you...
Give the number again.
888-329-3306.
I'm going to teach you something, Joanne. You ready?
Yeah.
You ever listen to Bob Grant when you were younger?
No.
You're not that young.
That's I'm not that old.
Did you ever listen to Bob Grant when you were younger?
I don't know who that is.
I have no idea who it is either.
Wait a minute. I know you and I are about... you're not younger than me, are you, Doug? I'm 50. I'll be 59 tomorrow, actually.
Yeah? Oh, yeah. I wrote that down to wish you a happy birthday.
Are you? I'm 29.
You what?
49.
He's 49? I'm older than you by 10 years?
No.
And I haven't run for governor yet? Wait a minute. I got to change that. Next year. I mean, next cycle I'm running for governor. That's it.
We're the same age.
I was like, you're 2 years older than me. Woohoo.
So Bob Grant used to be
really old for his age.
Bob Grant used to be a radio host in New York on WABC. He was one of the most popular radio hosts in New York, and he used to say on the air that if he said the phone number 7 times, the phone would start to ring.
Oh.
So I started doing that on my show on Sunday, and sure enough, the phone rings like crazy.
All right, I said
so
it 2 times.
Try it 7 times. Watch.
All right, so I have 5 more to go.
Yeah, you got no, you got 7. You got to do
because I did
it's
too.
A different, no, yeah, no, but it's you got to do it at the same time.
Oh my goodness.
Watch this. Go ahead,
oh wait,
it
started ringing.
It already started ringing. Cool.
All right, so I'd like to say one thing though. Don Beischel sent me a text and gave us the answer for the state that does the. Balloting, the mail-in balloting, and has never had a Republican winner since, and that's Oregon. So anyway,
I
thanks,
like the way
Don.
You said it, Oregon. You know why? Because they
They're gone. All right. So we have a caller calling in. So let me.
You know, my favorite part about you, Doug, is you always laugh at my jokes.
What? Yeah,
all right. Hello. Hey, Scott.
Yeah, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Happy Thanksgiving, dear.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving. Did you enjoy yours?
Yeah.
Did you eat too much food?
Yeah, and you know, if you stuff yourself on Thanksgiving, if you stuff yourself, you might have to quit eating cold turkey.
Oh, that's great.
That's a good one.
I gotta keep that in one. Yeah, that's a good one.
I like it. All right. So, what do you have to talk to us about, Scott?
Yeah, I saw Don Beischel's Facebook post about talking today about financial issues. One thing that in the state that really needs to be dealt with is the Turnpike Commission and their astronomical debt that they've run up since Act 44 was put in place. Act 44 under Rendell, what it did was it funded mass transit in the Philadelphia area, SEPTA, but the whole act was funded by putting tolls on Interstate 80, which the Federal Highway Administration denied 3 times. And Act 44 should have been null and void when the funding didn't come through for it.
So,
but I
don't know anything about that, actually.
No. So, Senator, do you know anything about
Doug,
that?
Doug might.
Yeah. It's just really crazy the way things are going because, well, up until this year, the Turnpike Commission was paying, I think, $450 million a year into PennDOT to pay for mass transit in Philadelphia. But their funding mechanism, the tolling of I-80, was disallowed. And that was like back in 2009 or 2010. And they just left things in place and the Turnpike borrowed money.
So Scott, let me ask you a question. You ever hear you ever hear the term follow the money?
Oh yeah, that's what you have to do.
Scott is leading to.
Yeah, there's a lot of people making a lot of money on whatever they do. You know, we've seen this over and over again, and you know nothing's ever going to change. This is what you do. You learn how to pay less taxes. That's what I teach people to do.
Yeah, and we'll be talking about that when Mastriano.
Yeah, exactly.
So, since Mastriano's only on until 12:30,
so stay listening, Scott. We're going to be talking about how you can pay less taxes and not have to worry about the people here, the people here in the state taking your money.
Let me add one thing, though. The Turnpike Commission has run up $14 billion of debt, as much as the general fund has, since 2009. And they just keep running up more debt.
Yeah, but now they don't have any employees on the Turnpike to collect the money, so they'll make up for it pretty quickly.
But the thing is, no, they won't.
It was a joke. I was being sarcastic.
Yeah, no. they just keep jacking up rates. But the problem is, if you go look at the Turnpike, when it was instituted back in the late 30s, there was a 40-year bond to build the Turnpike with a stipulation when the bond was paid off, the Turnpike fees would disappear.
Yeah.
And has not happened.
Yeah, it'll never happen.
They keep rising and rising and rising. I just know it's ridiculous. Well, thank you, Scott, so much.
All right. Thank you.
Have a good day. So, Mastriano, do you know anything about this?
Well, obviously, the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission has a lot of issues. And when the new secretary came in, and he was appointed earlier this year, and he came in for confirmation in the Senate, I don't do, you know, Senator Cruz stump the Trump questions. I'm no attorney. I just want straight answers. And I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican. If you're qualified for the job, you get my vote. And so I simply asked the retired senator, I think it's Logan, I asked him, so what's your plan on fixing the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission? It's a disaster. It's one of the most expensive roads in the world, we're told. It's ridiculously high priced. And all he kept on saying, you know, that's a softball question. What are you going to do to reinvigorate and to streamline the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission? And all he kept on saying is, I'm going to reimagine. And he's reimagining without any data behind it or without any explanation. He's just throwing around a phrase. And so, first off, we need leadership. And sadly, good leadership, someone from the business community should be appointed there and not a retired politician. that can shake it up and streamline it, so it makes money. Secondly, the caller is absolutely right. Money, about 40-50% of the money, last I checked, is siphoned off and being used, you know, elsewhere in the state instead of being focused on just the turnpike. If you're tolling the turnpike, that money should be used just for the turnpike and not funding pet projects across the state or Philly or elsewhere. And then, of course, you know, lastly, and Larry mentioned this here. So during the COVID shutdown, you know, the toll collectors were sent home. They were promised by our acting Secretary of Transportation to have their jobs back. And they were promised that. And then right after we confirmed her, apparently she lied to them, and they were all fired. I mean, they were told, don't come back. You know, regardless of my opinion on having, you know, toll collectors, you know, on the state turnpike line, they were promised they're going to have their jobs, and they should have been, you know, that should have been honored. Larry's right. Okay, so then was there any benefit for losing these people? I see no benefit. The turnpike still is a catastrophe financially, and it's a complete disaster because of corrupt politics and politicians. And we got to get our stuff together. So what's happening with the high toll, of course, is driving many trucks off on the secondary roads like Highway 30, right. Lincoln mm-hmm. Highway. And those roads aren't designed to take high capacity, you know, heavy vehicles in that kind of, you know, traffic. And so now we're paying in the communities for disastrous roads. And the roads in Pennsylvania, I can testify as anyone who's driven on them, but all 67 counties, our roads in the state are terrible.
They really are.
Yeah, I know. I used to like to take the turnpike to go back home. I'm originally from the Pocono, Northeast Pennsylvania area. And it's just way too expensive. It cost me over $100 just to go back and forth now. So I end up taking the side roads up through New Jersey. And I do see more truckers on those roads now because of this.
Yeah. How about this new thing? You have Easy Pass, right?
Yeah.
So have you looked at your Easy Pass bill lately?
Actually, I haven't.
So most people don't. There's something that Easy Pass is doing.
Oh, no.
And you're not even catching it. If you go through the toll and it doesn't read your Easy Pass and it gives you a bill by plate, what happens is they charge you an extra $10 if you have Easy Pass and they have to bill you by plate because your Easy Pass didn't work.
Oh, wow.
Check it out. You'll be getting, it's actually like an extra fine.
Oh, wow. Lovely.
Yeah, and you don't even know it because you have your Easy Pass and automatic refresh, right? Like I do.
Check your bills, everyone, if you have Easy Pass.
Yeah.
So, Doug, you actually have some more free time now because you are not, you know, running a campaign as well as, you know, doing your senator duty. So I guess you probably really enjoyed time spent with your family yesterday for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we did. So, you know, after the election, obviously, we had to recover. It was, quite a run.
Yeah, sure.
We did everything we could. And yesterday was quiet with family. It was fantastic.
That's great.
A lot of people are reaching out. They're saying that they missed the rallies. They missed the events. But, you know, we're not going anywhere. So we have almost 2.3 million people that voted for us. You know, a record since 1962, my lifetime.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We need to keep this movement together. So, folks, you know, let's take a step back for the holidays here, but we'll be back. We'll be campaigning. We want to be influential. We want this Walk as Free People movement forged in a shutdown to have a strong voice in the state. We don't know what's next here. You just never know what's coming around the corner. But we need to be influential. We know how the game works. We fought together, and let's not turn our backs on it at this point.
So are you saying you may run for governor again?
I have no idea. You know, somebody sent me a recording, a video when I was doing an interview on the steps of the Capitol, you know, during one of our reopen rallies. It was that hot day in August, I think, or July in 2020. And people started yelling, "You need to run for governor." I said, "I won't do it unless the people walk with me through that, unless the people pull me in and draft me." And that's what we had. Mm-hmm. And that's why we won overwhelmingly in the primary, to the shock and dismay, of course, of the establishment. And we need to keep that fire alive. And, you know, as far as the Walk as Free People movement, you know, we can't walk away from our state. The outcome was not what we fought for. We worked so hard for it. But we're asking people to consider running for their, you know, county Republican seats. So be active in your county and have a vote in politics locally. Get on your school boards. Look at local government and even maybe county commissioners.
Tell me what you want me to run for, Doug. I'm running.
Wow. And you're in Bucks County?
I'm in Bucks County.
You would make a great county commissioner, brother.
So, oh, yeah, you so got the financial knowledge.
It's funny that somebody said that, and I said, that's the one thing I don't want to do.
Why not? Why not? Why wouldn't you want to do it?
You know who said to do that? Alex Fenton told me to do that.
Oh.
And I said, that's the one thing. I said, because the last thing I want to do is accounting.
Oh, okay.
I'm not an accountant. I'm a financial brilliant mind, but I'm not an accountant. You know, I don't want to sit there and go, okay, you know, I have to balance books to the last penny. I that's not my thing. That's
I'd like to see you at the commissioner board meeting, though, in those three seats. That would be really interesting to see you up there and having people, you know, tell you what they don't like.
But if I don't have to do accounting, I'll do it.
You will have people in the county doing that work for you. You'll be making a decision, though, together with two other commissioners.
So you don't have to do it, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm not going to
throw
my hat.
You're good at delegating.
I can't throw my hat in the ring right now, because if I do that, then they'll throw me off the air, because the second I say that, you know, you're going to have the competitor on or whatever, whoever's going to be running against me. So you have to give them equal time, right? Doug, we got in trouble for that on PhD, right?
I think you have them thinking about commissioner now.
Wow, I hope so.
If I have your endorsement, Doug, I'm going to go for it.
It's done, man. I'm there with you.
We'll have to talk. All right, so I know you only have a few minutes, so I wanted to talk about, even though, unfortunately, you're not our governor, you're still our senator, and you are still doing great things for Pennsylvania. And one of those things is I just saw that the Overdose Mapping Act became law. So can you please talk about that and why that's important?
We're the fourth highest in fentanyl deaths in the nation. You know, I talked a lot about this on the campaign trail, and it's a catastrophe. And Wolf and Shapiro have walked away from this. They've walked away from the victims, those stuck in the cycle of addiction, the family members, the crime that's caused by it. They've turned their back on the people of Pennsylvania. And so while we have these spikes in deaths in certain counties, there's no compelling directive where these reports come in a timely fashion. Okay, what am I talking about here? Say, you know, all the batches coming across the Mexican border are bad, but some are poisoned, killing people outright. And so when these batches hit, like, we'll say Franklin County, and we see a spike in deaths in the community, the mapping would require within a few days reporting to be sent up to a centralized location. And then we could surge assets and resources to these communities so we can save lives. And so the mapping is a big deal. It's an analytical tool we can use to help people that are suffering in our state.
Yeah, I think we all know somebody that has overdosed and unfortunately even died from drug overdoses and fentanyl. I have two people in my family who were affected by this. So, and I know there's, even knocking doors, I've met so many people who know somebody whose life has been affected by a family member that has died, or is in recovery. I mean, people who are in recovery for this, it's one of the hardest things. I've helped people in my practice overcome marijuana addictions, alcohol addiction, cigarette addiction, but when it comes to the heroin, it's the hardest thing. It's so hard for people to overcome, And now the fentanyl is being, I don't understand too much about this, but it's being like slipped into the drugs that are being sold on the streets, right?
I have no idea. I feel sorry for the people who become addicted. I've had this in my family. I've had it with people I've known, and it's frightening. It's extremely frightening what the drug can do to the person, but it's extremely frightening watching the person change.
Oh yeah.
They become manipulative liars, and it's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's scary. And I don't know if anything can stop this except just stopping the drug. Mm-hmm. Because you can't convince somebody, hey, if you take that heroin, you're going to become addicted. No, it's not. I can handle it. And then they shoot themselves up. And then they say the next time, oh, I can handle it. I can stop anytime.
Yeah.
And then 2-3 years later, I can stop anytime. Well, stop. I don't want to.
Yeah, I seen that with my brother. My brother, he, exactly what you just described. And he actually went into and he found access into the bank accounts of my mother and sister and ended up taking their money, just so he could get more of these drugs. So it's pretty scary. But Senator, I know there is one thing. I'm not sure if you're working on this or not, but I thought you were about going after the people who are selling the drugs.
Yeah.
You were talking about that before, right?
Yeah, that's called Tyler's Law. And okay. So Tyler was an 18-year-old young man in Chambersburg in my district, and his mom came to my office and told me the story. And he died of poisoning from fentanyl. He thought he was buying a painkiller off the street because of an injury. And then his mom was heartbroken that the dealer was back on the streets. And just a few months later, she saw him out there dealing drugs again. So Tyler's Law, if it passes, it's a bill right now, but we're calling it a law. Hopefully Shapiro have the cojones to do the right thing, yeah. Which I don't have high hopes. Either.
Well, yeah. He claims this is one of his issues, right? So let's see if he goes through with this, you know?
He's been the attorney general for 6 years and he hasn't done anything.
Exactly.
How do I believe this guy?
Yeah, I seen one of his posts on Twitter. I don't know verbatim what it was, but it was something like, you know, we got to do something about the high crime and, you know, drug overdoses in Philadelphia, you know, in our state. And it's like, you've been in this position for how long? Why? What have you done all this time?
Yeah, obviously he's going to say something about it. Sure.
Yeah. But before you go, we have somebody on the air that wants to say hello to you, Doug. Okay, so come on, Don.
hey Doug, how's it going?
Good, I love you, man. How you making out?
good. I'm out in Kansas visiting my son and his family for Thanksgiving, so I figured after a little over a year of campaigning, I figured I'd come out and reconnect a little bit with the family.
Fantastic. Thanks for all your hard work. You know, we appreciate you guys, and I hope you have a good time out there out west. That sounds great.
We always do. It's a great time and stuff. And, you know, the one thing I wanted to touch on real quick before you go is exactly what you had said, is that, you know, the movement that you started, quite honestly, is not going to stop just because you happen to only get 2.3 million votes instead of, you know, the 3 million that Josh supposedly got. So at this point, we're all working on different things. But, you know, the most important thing is that everybody stays involved and that we go. And at the local level, you know, this is a movement from the ground up. It's not a top-down movement.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I keep telling people is, you know, Doug may have lost, but he showed us the way to go forward. And, you know, and so
and he's not done.
we're not done. The movement is not done. And, you know, we're going to go forward.
Okay. Don, Doug didn't lose. He lost the race for governor. But he did not lose.
Yeah,
this is a continuing story, true. And I am really looking forward to the continuing story.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what happens in the future.
And Larry, the real important thing here to remember, and I think that you guys were touching on it as I jumped on, is Doug won the day of.
Oh, absolutely.
So, mm-hmm. now it's our job. It's our job now to utilize every tool in the toolbox, whether it's Doug or another future candidate. And start, you know, instead of vilifying the mail-in ballots, you know, we have to start using them like the Democrats do, putting them in the hands of our zeros, ones, and twos, and building up that number. And then if we do eventually want to get rid of mail-in ballots, it's not going to happen unless we get a Republican governor, Republican senator, and mm-hmm. a Republican House back in control. So, you know, we cannot win. We cannot do this if we don't utilize every tool in the toolbox.
How can we audit these mail-in ballots? That's what I really want to know.
Quite honestly, you know, and I think Doug has talked about this at verbatim. I don't think they have an interest in auditing the ballots, the mail-in ballots. Because if they did, they would come up with barcodes on the envelopes that they could match up to the ballots and stuff like that. And they don't. Once those ballots come out of those envelopes, you don't know what envelope the ballot came in.
That's
right. So there's no checks and balances in place because, again, I've said this over and over again, that COVID provided the Democrats with the tool that they needed to manipulate the system.
Yep.
And that tool was fear. And then they did it again this cycle when they overplayed the abortion hand. And they use the fear tactics. It's the same thing they always do with remember when Paul Ryan was running, and they said he was going to push grandmom off the cliff in a wheelchair and all that. The Democrats, they cannot run on their policies because they have
that's right.
Yep. And we've seen that very clearly with this last election.
Right. And Doug brought that up. I mean, think about this. Josh Shapiro refused to debate Doug Mastriano.
Right.
Not because of any other reason except for the fact that he had no policy or issue to run on.
That's right.
And Doug would have chewed him up and spit him out if he tried to go after Doug on the abortion
issue. Of course.
They changed it into something it wasn't.
Yeah, we would have been in a front row seat watching that one.
Oh, definitely. But on top of that, you know, think about it. If he was to debate, the only thing it could do is harm him.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So he knew better than to debate. It was pretty obvious. I was actually surprised Fetterman debated Oz eventually. Yeah. But I think the pressure was so much that Fetterman just figured, hey, fine, whatever, I'll debate
and
him.
It was after most of the mail-in ballots were in.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, but Senator, you probably have to go, right?
Thank you. Yeah. I love you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was wonderful connecting with you again. And everybody, please follow him on his Senator page, Senator Mastriano, and then also Fighting for Freedom on Facebook. And he's on Twitter, too, so follow him on Twitter.
Doug, I miss you, but we're going to keep in touch because I want to reach out to you and on a personal level.
Get the endorsement for commissioner?
Oh, yeah, and I got to get the endorsement. And do I have Don's endorsement? Don, do I have your endorsement?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Are you going to be my campaign manager? I already do a really good job.
So much fun to watch you against Marcia Gellia. Or I'm saying her name wrong, but Diane.
All right. I'm going to talk to both of you guys about this because if you guys are going to press this, I'm going to go for it.
I love it. Wow.
I love it. Happy Thanksgiving, Senator.
Happy Thanksgiving to you guys. Thank you.
Take care, Doug. Thanks.
So, Don, are you staying on, or are you gonna?
Yeah, well, one reason I really called on because when Scott called and was talking about the turnpike,
okay,
this is an interesting thing that I've discussed with people before, and I have a little bit of insight on here because one of my very first jobs was I worked on the turnpike, and back before they did what they did, the turnpike was a self-sufficient organization. In other words, the tolls that they collected went 100% to pay for maintenance, retirement, pension, salaries. No state funds were used for the Pennsylvania Turnpike at all. And then they changed the law, and they started siphoning off funds from the turnpike to pay for other state-run road projects. And the reason they did that was because the turnpike was actually in the black. Now, again, I'm not going to say the turnpike was – because it was very partisan. In other words, you know, it was all – you know, they would hire a family and all. I'm not saying they were lily white by any means. But from a business standpoint, it was self-sufficient, and it used no taxpayer money to repair the roads, to plow the roads for snow, to replace bridges on the turnpike, to pay salaries. There was no taxpayer money. The turnpike was self-sufficient. And then when they changed that law, and I think he was talking about it, I'm pretty sure it was in the Rendell when Democrats were in control. Then they started siphoning off money from the turnpike. And ever since that time, you saw tolls go up, up, up.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But yet you've seen maintenance and the quality of the roadway on the turnpike go down, down, down.
Well, we do have the whole extension being extended, the Northeast extension being extended.
Oh, really?
Right.
Yeah, it's been widened. It's actually great. Now that you're when I travel the road, it's like, wow, this is so different.
But again, the point was, whenever they did those projects before, the money was always there. In other words, they wouldn't tackle a project unless they had the money budgeted.
But Don, the money's always there for everything. This is what the world's become. The world's become, if we need the money, we're just going to create it. And right. I like it. I actually like it. I know it's insane, and it's now I won't be able to be commissioner anymore because I'm saying this. But it's the reality is if they need money, they just say, okay, we have the money and we do it.
Yeah.
No one's accountable anymore. No one cares anymore. And the funny part is all the people, because I teach people how to save money on taxes at investor schooling, I do it all the time. And the funny part is people complain, my tax money is going to this, my tax money is going to that. And I just say, you know what? Stop complaining about where your tax money is going because it doesn't matter. There's always going to be something that you want your tax money to not go to. And because there's always something that you want your tax money to not go to, you're always going to complain. So all I right. do is I teach people just to pay less taxes. So it's not my problem anymore. Now it's Joanne's problem because Joanne doesn't know how to pay less taxes yet. And you too, Don, you don't know how to pay less taxes yet. And when you guys don't know how to pay less taxes, you're going to go, ha-ha, it's not my money going there.
Definitely want to learn that skill. So, you know, Larry is here with us today. So I wanted to tell you a little bit about who Larry is. And so he actually is the owner of Investor Schooling, which you heard him say. He's a talk show host of Money Chat Now.
Correct, yes.
It's on 7:30 in the morning.
It's on 7:30 every day.
Yeah, five days a week, right? Yep. And then he's also an author of Money Hacks.
A book called Money Hacks, correct?
Yes. And you're an author of other books as well.
Yeah, I have five books total. That's my favorite one now.
Okay. Well, that's
Money Hacks is my most recent one. Correct. And it also has some tax savings in it. So if you want to go to Amazon, go to look up Money Hacks by Larry Steinhaus.
Yeah.
And you can find that. And we can teach you some things on how to pay less taxes.
And it's like on all bookseller platforms, right?
Oh, yeah,
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and buy it
in the store.
It's in the store. Oh, good for you.
In fact, you know, my mother thought, there was a picture I put on Facebook. You ready for this? This is how we always have to, you know, try to make our mothers and our fathers appreciate us. So there was a picture that I put in Barnes & Noble, that I found my book in Barnes & Noble. I took a picture. I said, look, my book's in Barnes & Noble. And my mother said to me, that was a really neat picture. So what'd you do, bring books in and put it in there?
I actually was just thinking that, too, wow, as you said that.
Really? Really, Ma?
I was actually thinking that as you were telling the story.
I see you're proud of your son. And she goes, oh, no, I'm really proud of you. I just thought. I'm like, yeah, okay.
I want to see how proud of you I can be.
Wait, then I said, did you read it? No, but I keep it on my shelf when I tell all my friends about it. I'm like, okay. Thanks, Ma.
She's like, anything I need to know, you'll tell me, Larry.
No. She doesn't listen to me either.
No.
Wait. I got kids, right? You know, they're telling
me. Wait, 1 second before you talk about the kids. I have to say the phone number again.
Oh, yeah. Seven times.
We're on third time right now.
No, seven times together.
Seven times together is what you're trying to say. That's a little too much for me.
Yeah. So please call 888-329-3306 if you have any financial advice questions at all for Larry, because he will be with us until 2 o'clock. 888-329-3306.
888 what?
329-3306.
Wait, he keeps talking. I can't hear it.
I know. Don keeps interrupting. See, you're going to make it happen.
Mute. TJ, put him on mute.
I could put him on mute, actually. I don't need TJ to do it. I have that power.
Say the number so everybody can hear
it. Because I am covering for him today.
All I can actually mute you today.
So 888-329-3306.
3306.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. So your book is about things about money that I never knew.
Right. Actually, it's because everything you think you know about money is wrong.
Okay.
So that's the subtitle, because everything you think you know about money is wrong.
So can you share one thing?
I'm going to share the first one. You ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, Don, let's see if you can help with this. I'll even see if TJ, our producer, can help with this one, all right? All right, I'm going to ask you guys all a question, and I want you to give me the answer that you think is the answer.
All right, I'll go last.
No. It doesn't matter. You can shout it out. What color is money?
Oh.
Come on, TJ. What color is money?
TJ, you go first, since
I'm going to say green.
Green, right? What color is money, Joanne?
I don't know. It's different colors.
What color?
Some are silver, some is gold. Well,
no. The bills.
The bills?
Yeah.
Oh, it's like white and green.
Okay.
But I actually heard it's not that. It's like something else.
And Don?
Yeah, black and white.
Black and white? Okay. I just pulled out a $100 bill out of my wallet, and the color is
like cream and green.
It's actually kind of like, and here's the new one. All I have is the old bills. I don't have the new ones.
And he pulls out a $100 bill.
Well, I have several $100 bills. So I'm one of those guys, I can't, if I don't carry several $100 bills, I feel naked.
Oh.
But it is actually blue-gray.
Blue-gray, yes.
Blue-gray. Mm-hmm. It is not green.
But it looks green.
Yeah, it doesn't look green. Our eyes are tricked. So that's the first thing. And I always use that as an example, but obviously that has nothing to do with my book.
It has nothing to do with making money either.
Right. You know, in my book, I talk about, you know, things like the difference between a traditional IRA and a Roth IRA and why one is better than the other in certain circumstances. There may be other circumstances. So if you try to decide which one is better, I talk about it. Did you know that you can buy a house in your IRA?
If it's a Roth IRA?
It doesn't matter.
Oh, either IRA.
I didn't know that. Yeah, you didn't know that.
One thing I did know is that you can, in your Roth IRA, you can actually trade stocks in your IRA, and you will never have to pay taxes on the gains.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing I love most about Roth IRAs.
Right, exactly. That's exactly right. So the Roth IRA, you will never have to pay taxes on it at all.
I love that.
Which is actually a great thing. And actually, here's a really cool thing. You could actually put $7,000 at my age. You could put six in everybody else.
But yeah, I was thinking that. I only could put six.
Yeah. Yeah, but at my age, you could put $7,000 in and check
this out.
How
many more years do you have to wait for that?
No. When you hit, it's 50, 55 or 50, I'm sorry.
Okay.
50.
Funny. Not that long.
It's funny. See, this is why I can't be commissioner, because I can't remember ages. I can't remember little things like that. But no, anyway. So
I don't think ages 50, are relevant.
No, at 50, you can put in $1,000 more. But let's say you're putting in $6,000.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you put in $6,000 on January 1st. And on that $6,000, this was put into your Roth IRA. And on that $6,000 on January 1st, let's say by September, it's worth $9,000.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you could pull the $6,000 back out, still not pay taxes on it, and the $3,000 still remains in there tax-free.
In your Roth IRA?
In your Roth IRA.
Really? And there's no penalties?
And there's no penalty.
Like under the age of 59?
You just can't take out the gains. You could take out the initial deposit.
So if I did that now at my age, I could do that. I could take, oh my goodness.
And then you could put the same $7,000 back in, use that to roll it along, and then pull it back out again. But you got to do it once a year.
Is that information in Money Hacks?
It's not exactly.
Okay.
But
it's information like this that you never heard of, that you don't know. So look up Money Hacks.
So you see my glasses?
Yeah, I do.
See, so, hey, Don, do you wear glasses? I don't remember.
Yes, I do.
I wear contacts and glasses.
Okay, great.
You'll never see me in my glasses.
So, do you know how to write off your glasses on your tax return?
No.
Yeah, I bet you don't either, Don.
No, I don't.
So I'm wearing a $900 pair of glasses right now. I can't remember some designer brand, but when I take them off, I can't read the designer brand, so I can't tell you what they are.
You need a pair of glasses just to read your
designer brand. So they're $900 pair of glasses, and I can write them off. And here's the really cool part: I write them off 10 years from now.
Why in 10 years?
I use something called a health savings account.
Oh, I've heard you talk about this on your radio show.
This is the greatest. Mm-hmm. The health savings account is the greatest thing you could ever do. It's like another IRA. I mean, it's not like a Roth IRA, but it's like another IRA. But you can actually not pay taxes on any of this money if you continue to keep receipts. Now, you're really into holistic healing, correct?
Yes.
Do you have any vitamins that you buy?
My whole cabinet full.
I'm sure, right?
Yeah.
And you cannot write those off on your taxes, can you?
Nope. Well, when I owned my holistic wellness business, I was able to write off.
Exactly. Yeah. Those are supposed to be the ones you were selling. Shh, don't tell anybody. But
well, I'm also using them to see how they work.
Uh-huh. Research. I got it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I played that game too. But the reality is, if you have a health savings account, you can write them off.
Now, as a self-employed person, though, can I have a health savings account?
Absolutely.
Okay, because after I heard that on your show, I actually researched it. And it was hard to find any information about that.
Because everything you think you know about money is wrong. You know why? Because everything you learned about money and everybody else learned about money, they learned it from their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And their parents don't know anything about money either.
Yeah.
So for years, I used to listen to my mother and father's advice. Put money away for savings.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really bad idea. Now,
buy bonds.
By bonds is not another at least that's better. Thing. Yeah. At least that's better than putting it into a savings account.
Mm-hmm. take 10% out of all the money you earn and put it in a savings account.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually makes a lot of sense for a beginner person. Now I teach that all the time, but I save money now. I save between $6,000 and $7,000 a month automatically in guess what? Equity in my houses.
Okay.
Because I'm paying portions of principal away. Every single one of those payments, that guess who makes them? I don't even make them.
You have it automatically done?
No, my tenants make those payments.
Oh, I got you.
So I have dozens and dozens of people going to work every day to pay my mortgages.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So
my net worth keeps building, and all I do is sit here and talk on the radio.
So so Larry is very skilled at investing money and stock options, but mm-hmm. he's also very, as you can tell, very involved in the real estate industry mm-hmm. too. So do you primarily focus on rentals, or do you do rehabs, or do you do loans? Do you do loaning to people who are looking to buy properties but don't have enough money, or anything else, or all of the above?
My focus is on rentals.
Okay.
And as we mentioned before, I'm 59 tomorrow. Tomorrow, I'm going to be 59.
Happy birthday.
No, I'm sorry, not tomorrow. Sunday. I keep thinking today's Saturday.
The 27th, right?
Yeah, 27th. Mm-hmm. So it's Sunday, actually. It's my birthday. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be 59, and all I'm thinking about is how much money I'm going to need or want, because I have enough, plenty of money to retire for the rest of my life. I've did that already. I just didn't want to do it anymore. That's why I opened up investor schooling in the first place. But the concept was I want to make sure that I can make as much money as I can to live forever, and obviously I won't. And then one day, I'm going to leave my kids with a major problem.
And what problem is that?
What to do with all these properties.
Mm.
Some people want to leave their kids a legacy. My goal is to leave my kids a problem.
So you're going to leave them a blueprint of how to handle all that?
Yeah, sort of. You know, I basically, I don't really care because I won't be here.
So the problem's no longer yours. You'll be in bliss somewhere or else.
Right, exactly. You know, it's just like, you know, I could just imagine my kids going through my files going, what did he do here? What do I do? And I don't really care, you know. If they figure out how to save the properties, great. I told them that they should continue to take the rent. But you know how people are. They would rather take... They'd rather take a big check,
a big chunk of money,
a couple of million dollars. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'd rather take a couple of million dollars and blow it.
And then they'll probably spend it within a year.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if they spend it. They might, but whatever.
A lot
of
people do.
But at the same time, it'd be so much better for them to just get. I mean, imagine your kid getting $15,000 to $20,000 a month every month for the rest of their life.
I'd like to imagine me getting that.
Well, I could teach you.
Now, you. I read that in 2008, you actually lost...
I lost everything. Everything. Yeah, it was the greatest thing that ever happened to me.
So from 2008 to now, you somehow, you know, made a path so that you are financially stable and even more so than financially stable. You're well off. You probably could not work for the rest of your life and still be fine, right?
Oh, I could stop. Mm-hmm. I actually don't work anymore.
Yeah.
You know, even... It's funny, because investor schooling, I do for fun. And I actually have... sat down and figured out that if I closed investor schooling, I would probably make an extra $300,000 a year.
Oh, wow. Because you'd be able to have more time.
Because I'd have more time to do mm-hmm. the other things that make me money. However, I have a passion to help people.
So tell me, we only have a few minutes before this segment is over. Sure. Tell me about one of your best students that you've had at investor school, and like somebody who just totally impressed you.
So I have a lot of students in it, but I'll give you my favorite
story.
You
have like over 1,000 reviews. Right?
No, we have, that'd be great. We have 165 star Google reviews.
That's still amazing.
So if you go to investor schooling on Google, you'll see that it's 165 star Google reviews. There's actually one negative review. It's actually one star. In fact, I tell everyone, go look at that because that review is hysterical. You have to see the review and then you have to see my response to the review. It's mm-hmm. hysterical. However, my favorite story of a student, and I'll tell you a story because it's kind of happy and kind of sad. So there was a guy who came to us with his wife, and it was about two and a half years ago, I guess, he became a student. And he had only bought two houses in his entire life. He bought one that he bought before the one he's living in. He sold that one, and now he's living in this house, right? And he came to us because he was probably around my age, 55, 56, whatever it was. And he was looking at retirement. He was saying, hey, you know, I want to change my life. I want to make things better. And we started to teach him. He started learning. He started to get excited. He started lending money, so he had about a couple $100,000 in his IRA. He started lending money to people. We teach people how to lend money properly so you get paid back and never have to worry. So he started getting an income off of that money. And then he decided to buy a trailer park and make a whole bunch of money on this trailer park. And then he fell into another trailer park.
Oh, wow.
So he literally bought two trailer parks. Now, his wife came to me during this time, and it was about a year ago she came to me and she said, hey, I just want you to let you know, his name is Don. I want you to let you know, Don is so happy now. He was not happy before he came here. He was actually miserable, looking for something to do. He was always depressed. And ever since he started coming here, he's been so happy. He's so excited about these trailer parks he bought. He's so excited about becoming a moneylender. And then unfortunately, about 4 months ago, Don got a super aggressive cancer.
Oh.
He was diagnosed, and 2 weeks later, he passed away.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, the reason...
So he left a problem to his family?
Well, he did. He actually did, which is kind of interesting. But, but more importantly, the fact was that his last 2 years, he lived happy and thrilled.
Aww.
Because he came to investor schooling. So that's why it's my favorite story.
Oh, I love
now,
that.
I really hope that this story doesn't play out for everyone else.
No. They get happy and then they get cancer and then
But the happy, you know, I mean, so many people reach out to me to say, this school has changed my life. You've changed my life. And every once in a while, I'm like, you know, why do I do this every day? And then somebody says that to me, and that keeps me going for the next 6 months.
Yeah, and that's something I actually want to discuss in the next hour is, you know, the mindset and the emotional effect on people after they experience, you know, more wealth, you know, thanks to investor schooling. Because I know for me, you know, I've had some really hard times, you know, where... Yeah, I had to heat up water just to take a bath. You know, I had times like that, and it was really tough and very depressing. And even though I'm a mindset coach and I'm I'm always, it's very hard to see me not at peace and not happy, even when I'm going through horrible times. But when money is lacking, that's the one time it's really hard to be really happy, you know, because money makes, you need money to survive in this world. So I can only imagine you have a lot of stories to talk about that, you know, how people.
Yeah, we can talk that in the second half.
Yeah, second half.
Yeah, because I'm going to talk to you about how money is never a problem.
Yeah, all right, I'd love that. So we are going to go to the, you know, take a break now and come back for another hour. Thank you for listening to The Conservative Voice.